This is the tax update for September the 15th, 2008. This week, we just disagree. What is the meaning of in connection with? The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners expect to do their own research and confirm Ryan Brazen's presentation before relying upon the sources presented. The podcast and supporting documents may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use includes using this podcast or document as part of a CPE presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners who subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. This week, we're going to look at a tax court case that came down, a reported tax court case, that deals with an area where the tax court has issued an opinion that disagrees with a holding of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals regarding a specific issue involving ESOP plans. Now, courts do disagree from time to time. In this particular case, we're looking at the tax court's disagreement with the 2003 decision of the Ninth Circuit in the case of Boise Cascades versus United States, 329 F3rd 751. The case that the tax court is deciding this week was the opinion in the case of Ralston Purina Company versus Commissioner, 131 TC number 4. And it took issue with the Ninth Circuit's view of what Congress meant in IRC section 162K, which denies a deduction for expenses incurred by a corporation in connection with the redemption of its stock. While the case in question specifically involved whether Ralston Purina could obtain a tax deduction for amount paid to its ESOP to redeem its stock, a specific issue that arguably may have been rendered moot for any current transaction by revised regulations issued after the date of the transaction in this case, the concept of what are expenses incurred in connection with the redemption of stock and what the proper test is to make that determination may apply in other arenas. Now, the underlying case involved a payment by Ralston Purina in 1994 and 1995 to its Employee Savings Investment Plan, or SIP, to redeem preferred stock payments that were distributed to employees that had terminated employment with Ralston Purina. Ralston Purina argued that since the payment would essentially be equivalent to a dividend under provision of 302(b)(1), remember, if we redeem stock, but the redemption does not meaningfully change the interest of the parties, that payment is deemed to be essentially equivalent to a dividend and taxed as a dividend. That in this case, since the relative interest of the plan itself as a shareholder was not changed by the redemption, and that's who had the shares redeemed, that therefore this was a payment equivalent to a dividend. Under Section 404K of the Internal Revenue Code, a corporation may take a deduction for an applicable dividend, as defined in Section 404K2, that's paid through an ESOP to the participants of the ESOP. To be an applicable dividend, the dividend must meet the following test. It has to be paid in cash to participants in the plan or the beneficiaries, must be paid and distributed to participants in the plan or the beneficiaries not later than 90 days after the close of the plan year for which it is paid, or is used to make payments on a loan described in Section A9, the proceeds of which were used to acquire employer securities. Now, Ralston Purina's view was that this was a dividend that was paid in cash to the beneficiaries, that was paid in cash to the plan. The plan then distributed that cash to the beneficiaries. So under K2AII, this is a distribution for which Ralston Purina should get a deduction when the distribution is made by the qualified plan. Now, Ralston Purina had not initially taken this position in the tax dispute with the IRS, but after the Ninth Circuit came down with its decision in the Boise Cascade case we talked about before, the Ralston Purina amended its position to take the position that it should be allowed a deduction for dividends in this case since its facts were virtually identical to the facts in Ralston Purina. Now, the IRS objected to this view of the matter. The tax court noted that respondent maintains that the issue was incorrectly decided by the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit and challenges the claim deduction on three grounds. First, the redemption dividends are not applicable dividends within the meaning of Section 404K. But two, even if the redemption dividends otherwise constitute applicable dividends as defined by Section 404K, their deduction would be disallowed as evasions of taxation under Section 404 K5. And three, even if the redemption dividends are otherwise allowable as a deduction under Section 404K, they are disallowed as amounts paid by a corporation in connection with redemption of its stock within the meaning of Section 162K. Now, for clarity, Section 404K5A provides that the Secretary may disallow the deduction under Paragraph 1 for any dividend if the Secretary determines that such dividends constitutes in substance an avoidance or evasion of taxation. Not surprisingly, the IRS believes this transaction would meet that test. However, the tax court decided that it didn't need to worry about the first two contentions of the IRS and could deal with this by going to the third contention that Section 162K would block any deduction for the payments made under this program. As a majority opinion notes, in reaching our decision, we need not traverse petitioner's convoluted arguments in support of his position that the redemption dividends qualify as applicable dividends under Section 404K2, or respondent's argument regarding Section 404K5, because in our view, Section 162K precludes that result in any event, notwithstanding the contrary position taken by the Court of Appeals. So what exactly does this infamous Section 162K say? Well, it reads as follows. That is, except as provided in paragraph 2, no deduction otherwise allowable shall be allowed under this chapter for any amount paid or incurred by a corporation in connection with the reacquisition of its stock or of the stock of any related person. Now, there are various exceptions provided in 2, but none of the exceptions are directly relevant to the payment of dividends via Section 404K2 involving the applicable dividend rules. In dealing with this provision in a similar situation, the Ninth Court of Appeals in Boise Cascade decided that, in fact, the redemption of shares from the ESOP and the payment of those amounts to the former employees was not sufficiently linked to make the deduction one of an expense paid in connection with a redemption. Noting, here we are confronted with two segregable transactions, the stock redemption by Boise Cascade and subsequent distribution to the plan participants by the trustee. The two are not linked. In fact, the transactions are entirely separate. First, although the plan provided that the redemption of the convertible preferred stock was required upon employment termination, distribution of the amount redeemed did not automatically occur. Indeed, if the participant had a vested plan account greater than $3,500, the participant could defer distribution of the account balance. The record indicates that there were participants who so chose in 1989. Second, the redemption of the convertible preferred stock was not a prerequisite to the trustee's duty to make distributions under the terms of the plan. The plan allowed the participant to defer distribution till death, disability, or retirement under certain circumstances unrelated to the act of stock redemption. The participant also had certain rights to control whether the distribution was to be made in a lump sum or in time payments. Thus, the terms of the plan make it plain that the triggering event for the trustee's duty to distribute payments is the election of the participant, not the redemption of stock. The government also attempts to set up a false dichotomy between Boise Cascade's position and the plain language of the statute. It argues that if Section 162K's disallowance were not to apply to transactions of this type, then the statute would have limited it to amounts paid by a corporation to redeem its stock rather than amounts paid in connection. However, the legislative history explains why the alternative language proposed by the government would be too narrow for purposes of the statute. And that language provided in the history, the Act denies a deduction for any amount paid or incurred by a corporation in connection with redemption of its stock. Congress intended that the amount subject to the provision will include amounts paid to repurchase stock, premiums paid for the stock, legal, accounting, brokerage, transfer agent, appraiser, and similar fees occurred in connection with the repurchase, and any other expenditure that is necessary or incident to the repurchase, whether representing costs incurred by the purchasing corporation or by the selling shareholder and paid and reimbursed by the purchasing corporation or incurred by persons or entities related to each other. Thus, the court goes on, the disallowance for payments in connection with the redemption of stock captures fees and other expenditures necessary and incident to repurchase, which would otherwise be deductible in business expenses. Yet, as the language of the plan makes clear, the distribution to the employees are a separate obligation from the corporation's obligation to the trust to redeem the convertible preferred stock, and thus are not necessary or incident to the redemption in the manner contemplated by the statute. In the Ninth's view, The payment did not materially reduce the ESOP's interest in the employer. The payment was one, therefore, that had to be treated as a dividend. And the latter payment was deductible under Section 404 and not blocked by Section 162K. The Ninth Circuit specifically decided that the origin of the claim doctrine is a proper one to apply, citing back to its 1994 decision in In re Croy v. United States, 94-2 USTC paragraph 50,316. In that case, the court explained, the government's interpretation of IRC Section 162K requires that the business purpose for the use of the borrowed funds be ascertained to determine deductibility. Under the government's theory, if the business purpose for borrowing funds is to redeem stock, then expenditures such as loan fees are not deductible. However, if the funds are borrowed for some other business purpose, then the identical expenditures may be deductible. This is the uncertainty which the Supreme Court rejected in Gilmore and Woodward. Therefore, we agree with Croy. IRC Section 162K and the origin of the claim test are consistent if the expenses which have their origin in a stock redemption transaction are non-deductible, and other expenses having their origin in a separate although related transaction remain deductible as ordinary necessary business expenses under Section 162A. By contrast, the contrast to the government's position is that Section 162K overrules the origin of the claim test established by the Supreme Court several years before Section 162K was enacted. There is no support for this result. Now, the U.S. District Court of Minnesota in January of this year came to the same conclusion, citing the Boise Cascade decision and its decision in General Mills v. United States, 2008-1 USTC, paragraph 50,141. Now, that said, why are we talking about this at the tax court, right? The Court of Appeals has ruled, isn't the tax court bound? Well, not in this case, because in this particular case, Ralston Purina has the unfortunate luck of having its case not being appealable to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Under the Golson rule, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decisions would be binding on the tax court if, in fact, this case had its appeals route going through the Ninth Circuit. But as this case does not have its routing through the Ninth Circuit, and the applicable court had not ruled on this matter, the tax court was free to issue its own opinion, which was issued as a published opinion. As a published opinion, that tells us that the tax court will rule the same way, or is supposed to rule the same way, because it is designating the case as precedential, at least outside of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That is, since the Ninth Circuit, if the case is still valid, and we are not totally sure due to some issues we'll talk about later about whether or not the logic could be decided otherwise, but outside the Ninth Circuit, the court clearly has indicated that such a structure will not be considered deductible by it if somebody brings a case back up in front of it. Now, the tax court, as we know, did not agree with the Ninth Circuit view on this matter, and in fact, it respectfully disagrees, which usually is code word for in the court opinion, we don't know what they were thinking when they wrote this, but clearly they don't have any of this right. Given that translation, let's take a look at the tax court's view. Now, the tax court summarized the Ninth Circuit's view as follows. Section 162K itself is an exception to the general rule of Section 162A that permits a deduction for all ordinary and necessary expenses paid or incurred during the taxable year in any trade or business. It prohibits deductions for expenses that would ordinarily be deductible business expenses, but for the fact those expenses were made in connection with the repurchase of stocks. In the words of the court in Boise Cascade, Section 162K prohibits a deduction claimed as a consequence of a stock redemption. Thus, it acts as a disallowance provision for otherwise allowable non-capital deductions incurred in connection with a stock redemption transaction. Boise Cascade goes on to say that the key question is whether distribution to the ESOP participants were payments made in connection with the redemption of the convertible preferred stock. In a nutshell, Boise Cascade Corp. appears to proceed on the premise that if the distribution payments made to the withdrawing ESOP participants are made in connection with redemption of stock, then 162K disallows deduction for the amount paid. The Court of Appeals then held the payments were not made in connection with the redemption of stock. The tax court notes that the Boise Cascade decision relied on the Croy opinion that stated the origin of the claim test was a proper test when Section 162K was raised by the IRS as a method for disallowing a deduction. The tax court noted it had previously rejected the holding in Croy, noting, we specifically rejected the Court of Appeals' narrow interpretation of the phrase in connection with in United States v. Croy. See Fort Howard Corp. and Subs v. Commissioner, 103 TC 345 from 1994. In Fort Howard, we noted that Congress had expressly intended the phrase to be construed broadly to include all the deductions necessary or incident to a redemption transaction. We also relied heavily on the opinion of the Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit in Huntsman v. Commissioner, 1998 case reversing the tax court's 91 TC 917 decision, which held that the phrase in connection with should be broadly construed. The tax court noted that in its view, the origin of the claim test was simply irrelevant in this case, holding, "We concluded that the origin of the claim test had no bearing on the Section 162K inquiry. Rejecting Croy's assumption that the in connection test under Section 162K must be fashioned in such a way as to be consistent with the origin of the claim test. We also concluded that Congress could not have intended Section 162K as a mere clarification of existing law because Section 162K prohibits deductions that are otherwise allowable under present law. 2 years after our opinion in Fort Howard, Congress enacted retroactive relief for borrowing expenses involved in both Fort Howard and Croy." Now, I suspect the Ninth Circuit might view Congress as implicitly rejecting the holding of the tax court by passing this clarification. The courts weren't getting it right. But that isn't the view the tax court held. Rather, they viewed the action as actually changing the law retroactively. However, after this analysis, the court then goes on to claim that the connection in connection with doesn't really matter, holding, "Ultimately, our holding in this case does not depend on our interpretation of the phrase in connection with, because we conclude that Congress expressly intended Section 162K to prohibit deductions of the funds used to effect a redemption." The tax court goes on to note that Ralston Purina ends up arguing both that the transactions are inextricably connected with each other in order to obtain its deduction under Section 404K, and then that they are not connected in order to avoid the application of 162K. Noting, petitioner urges us to adopt the Court of Appeals of the Ninth Circuit's reasoning, arguing that while the transaction as a whole qualifies for deduction under Section 404K, the distribution payments from the SIP to terminating employees are not connected with the petitioner's redemption of his preferred stock and thus do not run afoul of Section 162K. We note at the outset, that this line of argument appears to be facially inconsistent. Petitioner first argues that the redemption payments from petitioner to the SIP and the distribution payments from the SIP to the employees are linked in an integrated transaction, so the transaction fits within one of the transactions permissible under Section 404K, a dividend payment from a corporation to a plan and a distribution of those proceeds to the departing employees. Petitioner then argues that these payments were in fact not connected for purposes of 162K. Petitioner seems to want it both ways. It relies on the integrated form of the transaction to justify a Section 404K deduction, only to deny that form in another context. See Portland Golf Club v. Commissioner, noting that an inherent contradiction where taxpayer relied on two methods of calculation to simultaneously show actual losses and an intent to profit. The tax court indicates next that it believes the Ninth Circuit didn't approach the question properly, and when that is done, there is a linkage to the stock redemption. The tax court notes, Section 162K bars the deduction of otherwise allowable deductions that are made in connection with the repurchase of stock. The deduction sought is a 404K deduction. Section 404K1 provides that a corporation is entitled to a deduction for any applicable dividend that it pays with respect to applicable employer securities. We shall assume that deductions for the payments petitioner made here would normally be allowable under Section 404K. A deduction under Section 404K is not allowable unless the transaction qualifies as an applicable dividend. Thus, the proper question for Section 162K purposes is whether the otherwise allowable deductible applicable dividends that petitioner paid are in connection with the repurchase of stock. To answer this question, we must identify the transaction that constitutes the applicable dividend. The court found more problems with the Ninth Circuit approach in analyzing the 404K issue, noting, As for what payment in this case would constitute an applicable dividend under Section 404K, there are three possibilities. The redemption payment from the petitioner to the SIP, the distribution payments from the SIP to the departing employees, or the redemption payment to the SIP and a distribution from the SIP as an integrated transaction. The court in Boise Cascade, without analysis of Section 404K, determined the second option was correct, that the distribution payment from the plan to the departing employees was the applicable dividend to be analyzed under Section 162K. For the reasons discussed below, that position is unsupportable under Section 404K. Rather, it is both the redemption payment and the distribution of that payment as an integrated transaction that constitutes the applicable dividend under Section 404K. The tax court notes that in order to get a deduction under Section 404K, an integrated set of events has to occur. The action taken by the sponsor taken alone would not have allowed a deduction under Section 404K. As the tax court noted, petitioner made payments in redemption of the preferred stock held by the SIP. The redemption payments were made by petitioner, the corporation, to the SIP. The SIP properly distributed those payments. The redemption payments fit the technical definition of a dividend for purposes of Section 301 and 316 because the redemptions did not result in a meaningful reduction in ESOP's proportional interest in the petitioner. See Section 302B. However, they would not have been applicable dividends unless the SIP later distributed those payments in the prescribed manner. Similarly, the tax court notes, if the ESOP had simply paid out the balance to participants, that wouldn't have enabled a deduction. The court notes, distribution payments from the SIP determining employees standing alone do not fit the definition of applicable dividends for two reasons. First, an applicable dividend must be paid by the corporation, and the SIP is not the corporation. Petitioner is. Second, the distribution from the SIP are not dividends at all because a dividend is defined as a payment by a corporation to its shareholders under Section 316A. The SIP is the owner of the preferred stock. It cannot be the payer of dividends under Section 316. Thus, in the tax court's view, the deduction under Section 404K requires viewing both parties' actions as a unified whole. These distribution payments represent only the distribution of proceeds of a dividend paid by a petitioner to the SIP. Thus, a distribution payment alone cannot be an applicable dividend as that term is defined under Section 404K. Rather, both sides of these redemption transactions, redemption and distribution, are necessary for the transaction to fit the definition of applicable dividends found in Section 404K. The tax court thus concludes, petitioner's payments of these asserted applicable dividends were certainly in connection with the repurchase of stock. The first part of the applicable dividend transaction was a redemption. The funds of the transaction passed from the petitioner to the SIP to the departing employees are the same funds used to repurchase stock. Section 162K bars a deduction for payments of these funds used to repurchase stock. Therefore, the first part of the integrated transaction, the redemption of stock from the SIP, ensures the Section 162K bars the deduction of any portion of the transaction. As a result, we hold that Section 162K prevents petitioners from claiming deductions as deductions the amount it paid to repurchase its own stock from the ESOP, which were then distributed to terminating employees. For the reasons given, we respectfully decline to follow the contrary result reached in almost identical set of facts by the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit in Boise Cascade versus the United States. The tax court notes in a footnote reference that while the General Mills Court in Minnesota followed the Ninth's reasoning, another United States District Court in New Jersey rejected the Ninth's reasoning in a manner very similar to what the tax court just went to. See Konopko versus United States, 2007-2, USTC, paragraph 50582. In a concurring opinion, tax judge Swift chose to note that Section 404K5's anti-abuse language could, and in his view also should be used to disallow the deduction. In his view, the IRS had issued Revenue Ruling 201-2001-6, which held that such redemption payments were not deductible under 414K2. Now, the court noted that this ruling was issued after Ralston Purina had paid these dividends, but prior to Ralston Purina raising this claim later on in court. He notes, I would note the commissioner's disallowance of deduction under Section 404K1 based on the discretion given to him in Section 404K5A need not involve an analysis in finding a badges of fraud, typically associated prosecutions under Section 7201 of affirmative attempts by taxpayers to engage in willful tax evasions and with determination of willful civil tax fraud penalties under 6663. Indeed, in this case, petitioner filed its corporate income tax returns for 1994 and 1995 without claiming deductions for redemption dividends. At this time, no underpayments of tax were associated with the claim Section 404K1 deductions. Not until December 9, 2003, 2 years after Revenue Ruling 2001-6 was issued, did petitioner file, via its second amendment to the petition herein, claims for refunds for 1994 and 1995, asking respondent and this court to consider the deductibility of petitioner's redemption dividends and, if allowed, to refund overpayments of the taxes paid. There are no badges of fraud to be found here, and respondent does not contend otherwise. Rather, respondent simply contends that allowance of petitioner's claim redemption dividend deductions would be improper and give rise to payments to underpayments of federal income tax, which a commissioner exercising his discretion under Section 404K5A has described as tax evasion. Judge Nims also notes in the interim, the IRS has now issued proposed regulations that specifically hold that such a payment is one that Section 404K5A will apply to. Lastly, as stated in 2006, the Secretary promulgated final regulations reflecting the position set forth in Revenue Ruling 2001-6. See Section 1.162K1 Income Tax Regs, Section 1.404K3 Question and Answer Number 1 Income Tax Regs. That is, payments to reacquire stock held by an ESOP used to make benefits distribution to participants are not allowed under Section 404K2 and 5. Although the regulations apply only prospectively and only to amounts paid or incurred after August 30, 2006, the regulations are relevant as they are consistent with Revenue Ruling 2001-6. And there it quotes from the Smiley v. Citibank case from 1996 that where a court is addressing transactions that occurred at a time where there was no clear agency guidance, it would be absurd to ignore the agency's current authoritative pronouncements of what the statute means. Now, where do we stand? As noted, the IRS now has regulations in place that label this transaction of a type that would not be allowed a deduction. And given Section 404K5's language granting the authority to the IRS in this area, it would appear that any current transaction would face a very uphill battle to obtain a deduction, having to overturn the regulations as being unreasonable. However, the methods used by both courts in analyzing the payments made in connection with redemption is of interest for taxpayers that find themselves in situations where payments may appear to be traceable to a redemption. While the actual fact patterns in both Croy, definitely in that case, because Congress specifically indicated allowance of the type of deduction claimed in Croy, and Boise Cascade, where the IRS now by regulation claims you could not get the type of deduction that was allowed in Boise Cascade, may make those cases not terribly relevant for taxpayers that are contemplating the exact same transactions today. The analysis in all these cases and the different views that the tax court and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals took in analyzing what is meant by an expense paid in connection with a stock redemption may be of interest to taxpayers who have expenses that may arguably be in connection with a stock redemption and who have to determine if those expenses are or are not going to be considered deductible. Now, this has been the tax update for September the 15th. I am getting ready now, actually a week from tomorrow, or a week from, I should say tomorrow as I record this. I'm recording on Friday afternoon. I'll release this probably Sunday afternoon. But a week from the Saturday just passed by the time you're hearing this, I will be traveling down to Roanoke, Virginia. I have 2 days of presentations at the Virginia Accounting and Auditing Conference at the Hotel Roanoke in Roanoke, Virginia on technology for tax practice. As well, I will be presenting the following day on Wednesday in Towson, Maryland for the Maryland CPA Society regarding employee benefits and fringe benefits, and we'll be talking about that for a full day. Then I come back to Phoenix, coming out again for one more presentation on the 30th of September in Minneapolis, actually in Bloomington, Minnesota, regarding partnership taxation advanced issues. So an interesting set of presentations coming down in that regard. So if you are available and are able to come to any of those, I look forward to seeing you. Otherwise, I'll try to get another podcast up. The schedule gets a little tight here, so hopefully they'll continue to go up on schedule, but we'll work to see if that can happen anyway, even with my travel schedule the following week. This has been the Tax Update for September 15th, as always brought to you by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Be sure to visit them and consider subscribing to their electronic mail newsletters on tax matters of interest to those of us who are tax professionals. This has been the Tax Update.